from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this edition,
the three witnesses we have before this committee today collectively pose, I believe, the single greatest threat to free speech in America and the greatest threat we have to free and fair elections.
That was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas earlier today in the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee's virtual hearing on big tech's bad behavior. We'll get more from Congressman James Comer of Kentucky, the ranking member on the House Oversight Committee. And night two of rioting in the city of brotherly love as looters shoot looters. We'll talk to Dr. Herb Lusk, pastor of Greater Exodus Baptist Church in downtown Philadelphia, about whether or not it is outside agitators that are fueling the riots. And with an understanding of world history at a deficit, are there some parallels between what is happening in the U.S. and what has happened in Marxist takeovers in other countries a century ago that we should be reminded of? We'll talk about it with Larry Taunton, who has a new book out this week, Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. That's coming up later here on Washington Watch. And 6 days, are you counting? 6 days from a defining election, have you voted? Are you prepared to vote? Vice President of FRC Action, Brent Kylan, is here with a look at some of the close congressional races around the country and the tools that are available to you to help others make the right choice. You don't want to miss that coming up later. Also going to have a poll question for you. Want to know, have you already voted? Have you voted already? A lot of people, I think close to 60 million people have already voted. Estimating over one-third of voters will vote early. I voted early last week in person. Certainly encourage you to vote in person if at all possible. But that's the poll question. You can text the word radio, R-A-D-I-O, radio, to 53445. 53445. Have you voted? Take the poll question. It'd be interesting to see what percentage of our listeners voted early. And let me remind you again, coming up this Saturday, we will have Freedom Sunday will be airing on the Daystar Network Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. I think that's Eastern time. So check it out. Go to freedomsunday2020.com to find out more about that. And also, check out prayvotestand.org. Tonight, we have at 8 p.m. Eastern time our ninth edition of Pray, Vote, Stand. Senator Lindsey Graham will be joining me, as will Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma will be with me as well, among other guests. Okay, after the big tech companies censored one of the nation's largest newspapers, the New York Post, over the politically explosive story of Hunter Biden's emails, Republicans in the Senate immediately called for a hearing. That hearing, entitled Does Section 230 Sweeping Immunity Enable Big Tech's Bad Behavior? Well, that took place earlier today. Now, one of the blatantly bad behaviors that was pointed out is the double standard frequently seen in who gets censored and who doesn't by the big tech companies. In fact, that point was pushed by Senator Rick Scott of Florida earlier today.
Your companies are inconsistently applying their own rules with an obvious bias. Your companies are censoring free speech. You target the president, the White House press secretary, Senator Mitch McConnell, the Susan B. Anthony List of pro-life group, while giving dictators a free, unfettered platform.
Joining me now to talk about this and the significance of today's hearing and what might come out of it is Congressman James Comer, who serves the 1st Congressional District of Kentucky and is the ranking member on the House Oversight Committee. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be back.
So what do you think was accomplished in today's hearing over on the Senate side with the big tech companies?
Well, I think several things were accomplished. First of all, American people saw the concern that the Republicans have over this clear bias by the three major tech companies in the social media world. They also saw the utter disregard that the Democrats have because they recognize the fact that big tech is essentially a campaign arm of the Biden campaign down the stretch, censoring damaging material on Biden, but letting every conspiracy theory, every baseless attack on Trump go uncensored on social media. So I think the American people saw the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue. Secondly, I think the American people saw that big tech doesn't have any defined way they determine what is censored and what is not. They never really answered those questions. And it's, you know, it's clear that there is a bias. These are liberal organizations, liberal corporations, and they're protected from liability through Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. So what I think will happen now is Congress will step in and they will amend Section 230. And I think that big tech is about to lose a lot of the liability protection that they've enjoyed. And I think that it's going to hurt their bottom line. And, you know, I was shocked to see the disregard for the concern by the Republicans in the committee. Big tech just blew it off. And, you know, I don't know if they think the elections are going to go their way and the Democrats will come in and save the day. But I think big tech's going to be held accountable now through Congress. And I think they'll regret showing their hand as to their bias against conservatives.
Congressman Comer, I hope you're right, because what I've seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as the Republicans have raised this issue over the last few years, it seems to be that the big tech bias is only intensified. They've not cleaned up their act. They've not even slowed down. It appears that it's become even more intense. And I don't know, is that attributed to the fact they think they're going to have the Democratic Party in control, the left's going to be in control and is going to be their ally?
I think that's what it is. That's the only thing that I can account for, and I believe this is their Alamo. And I believe they are sitting back watching CNN and MSNBC and reading the liberal newspapers, and they're thinking, you know, we've got this thing in the bag. We're just going to disregard the concerns of conservatives across America, the conservatives in Congress, and we're going to continue to step it up a notch and censor even more conservative, conservative news, and we're going to let the liberal, baseless conspiracy theorists continue to post on social media whatever they want. And I think that big tech's going to be in for a big surprise on November 3rd, as are most of the mainstream media. And from that point on, I think big tech will be running back to Congress wanting to sit down and work with them on reforms moving forward, because they've really gone so far now to the point to where Section 230 will be amended. It's just a matter of how it's going to be amended. And, you know, my concern is I'm a free market guy. I'm a pro-business guy. Anytime Congress steps in to pass major legislation, there usually are unintended consequences. And I hate to create more regulations, but we've got three companies that have monopolies on the social media, and they're clearly influencing the election.
Yes, they are. And but this really isn't creating more bureaucracy. What you're doing is simply leveling the playing field for all media outlets, because they've had a special status with the Section 230, the sweeping immunity provisions that they've had. So this would put them in the same line with newspapers and others, where, you know, they can be held accountable civilly in the courts. And I think it's a first step. But I think there's also an issue that has to be looked at here about monopolies, because I think they're squeezing out any competition.
Exactly. And I think they underestimate the Democrats' desire to break up those big tech companies. You know, the Elizabeth Warrens of the world have been quiet. Remember, a year ago, they were adamant in their disapproval of big tech. But now that big tech has swung the Democrats' way, and they're, you know, banning any article that would implicate Hunter Biden or Joe Biden's involvement with Hunter Biden, now the Democrats are like, oh, okay, we're gonna just turn a blind eye to big tech's bad behavior. But that's why I said early on, I think that they're going to be in for a rude awakening after the November election. I think that they're going to be in the crosshairs in both parties. And I think that those three companies, as we know them today, Google, Twitter, and Facebook, they won't resemble the same company a year from today, because I think there's going to be major congressional action. And I just, from watching the testimony today, I do not think they realize what's going to happen to them. But I do think they're going to be held accountable.
I want to see what I think will be like a cat fight when you remove the Section 230, the immunity, and you allow trial lawyers to come after big tech. So they come after big tech, which has become kind of the guardian of the left. And I think there's going to be it's going to be interesting to watch the internal conflict that's there in the trial lawyers that want to go after big tech that has all the money, but at the same time understanding that is that's the left ideological core.
Exactly. Their lobbyists will be begging to meet with Republicans next year, because when you get rid of their immunity, their liability protection, you're exactly right. The trial attorneys will be feasting on those three big tech companies. And that's what the Democrats want. The Democrats are honestly in a win-win situation here with big tech. They have them banning any type of news that would harm Joe Biden to help their candidate. But at the same time, they realize what's fixing to happen, and they're going to turn their backs on big tech. And big tech's going to be reformed, and they're going to lose their liability protection, and their financial base, which is the trial attorneys, are going to be able to go in and make a lot of money off big tech. And, you know, I don't ever know of a time when Republicans willingly created a situation where trial lawyers could make money, but big tech has just abused their privilege of having liability protection by clearly getting involved in this presidential race. They clearly have a bias against conservatives. And, you know, it's okay to have an opinion, but when they start using their essential monopolies to come in and ban anything that would implicate Joe Biden, but yet let every baseless conspiracy theory against Donald Trump go uncensored, then I think that they're going to have to pay a price, and I believe that they will. I really do. I know people get frustrated because it doesn't seem like these companies or these bureaucrats ever get held accountable, but I'm pretty confident that these three big tech companies are going to be held accountable in the coming months.
Well, I, again, certainly hope you're right, and I've been talking to trial lawyers, and I would love to see this, because, I mean, this is going to be like a buzzard roadside buffet. When you open this up to the trial lawyers going after those big three. Congressman Comer, thanks so much for joining us today here on Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, I want to talk about we've kind of lost our history, our understanding of world history, and the issue of parallels between what happened a little over 100 years ago with the Russian Bolshevik Revolution and what we see happening with leftists here in this country. Are there parallels that we should be looking at? Larry Taunton, executive director of the Fixed Point Foundation, is here next. So don't go away. Back with more Washington Watch after this.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Poll question for you today, folks. Text me the word radio to 53445. That number, 53445. I'll send you a link to take the poll question. The question is this: have you voted? I'd like to know, have you voted? I want to find out what percentage of our listeners have voted early. And how many even plan on voting? Okay, we're just 6 days away from a critical election. You know, it appears that America is becoming more divided each day. You know, President Trump has become a trigger for the left as anarchists chant death to America in the streets of our own cities. Most interpret what they see as, it's illogical, and they try to explain it away as nothing more than a response to President Trump and his policies. But you know what? That doesn't hold water. You know, millions of us did not like the policies of Barack Obama, but we didn't burn cities and loot stores. Is there something bigger going on here that we might miss without an understanding of world history? Joining me now to talk about this is the executive director of Fixed Point Foundation, Larry Taunton. In the 1990s, Larry was a graduate student of Russian history and Marxism and is now the author of a newly released book, actually released yesterday, Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. Larry, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony. It's good to be with you.
What timing for a book like that to come out just days before an election?
Yeah, I'll say. I set out, Tony, to write this book 3 years ago because I begin the book by speaking of Colin Kaepernick and how the left wants to burn this country to the ground. But I didn't anticipate that they would literally seek to do just that.
Well, given your understanding of history, you know, 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution, are there any parallels? You know, is it people are just upset with what they see, or is there something bigger taking place here that we need to take note of?
Yes, and in fact, I just explained it in a little short video we just put out on YouTube, Understanding Socialism, Marxism, and the Radical Left's Plan for America. The parallels, there's great similarities between this time and that time, and then great dissimilarities. The Russian government and the Russian Orthodox Church were both quite rotten. And so what Marx referred to, or Gramsci referred to, as a frontal assault, meaning an armed insurrection against the government, worked because it was easy to bring those governments down. But the United States government has many more institutional pillars, and those are the family, our tradition, our patriotism, the church, which is the key institutional pillar, our government, our laws. And so they seek through cultural Marxism to penetrate all of those and to rot them from within. And that's what we're seeing.
Very interesting. I mean, when you see these, what's happening, I'm going to have Dr. Herb Lusk, pastor of Greater Exodus Baptist Church in downtown Philadelphia, is going to join me in a moment. But what we've seen with each one of these events that have occurred are outside agitators that have come in to take advantage of these situations. Many of them appear to be organized. So it looks like there is a concerted effort to, you know, if it's to topple the government, I'm not sure exactly what the end game is, but it clearly looks like this is more than just spontaneous dissatisfaction with the police departments.
Sure. A nonprofit has actually put out a study. You can find this on Red State and a number of other places. A study that was done with Princeton University to get at the core of these riots. And it discovered that 95% of the riots have Black Lives members actively engaged, meaning that these riots aren't spontaneous, that there is a driving force behind it. And I think the goal is twofold. I think it's on the one hand to embarrass the president of the United States, to try to say that it's his fault, everything that is happening. And even if he responds with force, he'll be ridiculed as saying, aha, see, he is a tyrant. If he does nothing, then he's considered weak. And also, on the other hand, the Democratic Party is essentially making a bargain with the American people. We will not give you rest and let you have normalcy until you elect us.
So when you, and let's go back to your book for a moment, because I think it's relevant to this discussion. What is it that makes America great, and why must we fight to save it? Because what we're hearing is America's bad. It's bad to its core, and we just need to scrap it. I mean, that's essentially the message that's on the street. And that message, quite frankly, from all that I've been able to ascertain, is a message that has been filling the classrooms of America.
Yeah, well, it really has. And not only that, but I mean, imagine this. Last week, Joe Biden said in a speech, America has never been great. Now, that alone should make him unelectable. I can't imagine a Democrat or Republican of any previous generation saying something like that. But the data says that 69% of Americans have never been abroad. And I would argue that the remaining 31% have probably only been, say, on a fishing trip to Canada or to Tijuana and maybe a cruise to the Caribbean. So when a claim like that is made, most Americans have no way of evaluating that statement, Tony. So I did it for them. I went around the world, quite literally. It's an adventure story. But I'm also educating you. I went around the world literally to 27 countries. I've been to 55 in all, to help Americans see what the rest of the world is like. So through this book, they around the world in more than 80 days, discovering what makes America great and why we must fight to save it, I'm introducing you to socialism. I'm taking you to old Marxist ruins of countries. I'm showing you Islam. I'm showing you Christian persecution.
So, Larry, how can folks get a copy of the book?
They can find it anywhere, online retailers, and today a wonderful endorsement from Dinesh D'Souza and David Horowitz and Eric Metaxas, so you can get it on Amazon, everywhere else. Thank you, Tony.
Great. Thanks, Larry, so much for being with us. We'll get you back on to talk more about that, but very timely. And folks, I would encourage you to check that out. Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. All right, when we come back, Dr. Herb Lusk, pastor of Greater Exodus Baptist Church in downtown Philadelphia, who's actually hosted some FRC events in years past, good friend of mine. He's going to be joining us with an update on what's happening there in Philadelphia with these riots. So don't go away. Back with more Washington Watch next.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
In this important season for our nation, it is imperative for Christians to pray. While we have a responsibility to vote for biblical values and stand for truth, our priority should always be to seek the Lord first. Each week until the election, FRC and FRC Action will host a special Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast to equip you to pray, vote, and stand for biblical truth. We'll have experts, elected leaders, and Christian leaders join us for these half-hour programs that will help you see through the fog that's been created by the biased lenses of the mainstream media. While you're there, be sure to take the 2020 Pray, Vote, Stand Challenge and make a commitment to pray for our nation, vote biblical values, and stand for truth during this 2020 election season. To watch the broadcasts and to take the 2020 Pray, Vote, Stand Challenge, visit PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you again tonight, Pray, Vote, Stand, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll have Senator Lindsey Graham, also Senator, we'll have Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma will be with us as well. All right, second night of protest, looting, burning, shootings, looters shooting, looters in Philadelphia. It all started with the death of 27-year-old Walter Wallace. Wallace confronted police officers. He's bipolar, having some issues. Confronted two police officers with a knife, was advancing on them after multiple warnings to drop the knife and to stop. And I watched the video. The police were trying to disengage. They shot and killed him. Now, they shot multiple times, I think maybe more than they needed to. Now, some Philadelphia protesters have taken matters into their own hands that have been targeting police officers. The first night, one officer, a 55-year-old police sergeant, a female, was struck by a truck. Her leg was broken. She's still hospitalized. Others, about 30 other officers have been injured, and multiple stores have been looted. The question is this, as we were talking about earlier, are there outside agitators coming in here? Now, just keep in mind that back in June, Philadelphia had riots then as well. And I think the city kind of hamstrung themselves because they actually reduced the police's budget by $33 million, which reduces training and their ability to engage the public appropriately. Well, joining me now with more insight on what's happening there is a good friend of ours, former running back for the Philadelphia Eagles and now pastor of Greater Exodus Baptist Church, Dr. Herb Lusk, senior pastor. Dr. Lusk, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. So good to hear you. Tell us what's happening. Is there been any calm descending on the city of Philadelphia, or is it still in turmoil and unrest?
Well, the city is in turmoil and unrest. However, there is a curfew tonight at 9 o'clock, which is going to cool some of the violence.
Will the police enforce that curfew?
They will. I've been riding around the city, and there's a strong presence of police officers in all critical places.
And Herb, I know you work closely with the city. You've got a lot of inner city ministries there. You've been a key part of the downtown area there. Are there those that are coming in from the outside that are agitating, that are creating these riots, or is this something spontaneous that's happening internally?
Well, I mean, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and riots, you know, whenever the crowds get together, it doesn't take much for it to get out of hand. However, in this particular situation, my son, who is my assistant pastor, one of my assistant pastors, he marches. He's out with the pastors trying to make sure things are calm and easy. And one of the things that he shared with me is that there were people from other parts of the country that were there. Some of them were most of them were dressed in black, and they had backpacks. And there is some belief that they in those backpacks were bricks.
So, I mean, there's obviously there was, as I mentioned back in June, there were protests in Philadelphia. I mean, it's been a tough summer all across the country. But are there systemic problems within the Philadelphia Police Department there that are not being addressed?
I would say that there's systemic problems in our police department all over this country for the most part. There are issues. There are fears. I mean, right now our country is in complete turmoil from the standpoint of all these different incidents that have been taking place. And, you know, I was looking at the film as well, Tony. I saw that you saw the film, and the police did try to disengage as best they could. However, seven bullets, you know, I haven't been trained as a police officer, but if a guy's coming to me, there's two police officers, and both of their guns are drawn. They're drawn. And the little knife that this man had coming up to them, I mean, it just seems like to me, if you had to shoot him once to protect yourself, yes, but seven times?
I agree. And I don't know the training protocol there. And in my training as a police officer, you would what they call double tap. You'd shoot two rounds. But that, to me, that was the first thing I saw, that it was excessive. They did try to disengage, but I don't know what their training is. And that's part of the concern I have. I see that even on the heels of the $33 million cut to the budget, that they're actually now talking about taking away mace and other tools that the police officers use that can avoid from having to use deadly force. You don't want to leave them with just a gun.
Well, you know, obviously, I think that every police officer should have a taser. I mean, taser's about $1,000 a taser. You get 6,500 police. I mean, you're talking about 6.5. Make sure that they don't have to use deadly force.
Right. The things that we have. Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot to be done in law enforcement across the country. And part of it, I think, is that the pastors like you and churches being more engaged in the communities, as you have done. Herb, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk with you. Folks, don't go away. We're going to come back on the other side of the break. Brent Kylan, Vice President of FRC Action, joins me with an update on some of the key races across the country and tools you can use. That's next.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com/ways to read.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me again remind you tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the ninth episode of Pray, Vote, Stand. Senator Lindsey Graham joins us. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma is there, as well as David Benham joins us. So tune in tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And the poll question for today, if you've not yet taken it, I want to encourage you text the word radio to 53445. We're going to talk about this early voting. Have you voted already? Have you voted? I'd like to know. 53445, text the word radio, and I'll send you a link to take the poll question for today. All right, joining me now in studio, Brent Kylan, Vice President for FRC Action. And Brent, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you again.
Okay, we were just talking about early voting, and I'm getting some early numbers here from our listeners. Almost three quarters have voted, which I thought that would be pretty much the case. I think ours are on top of this. And so 74% have voted, 26% have not voted, and zero say they don't plan to vote. So
that's good.
That's good. I would have I'd have heart palpitations if I heard that they were not going to vote. So let's talk about this. What does it look like in terms of early voting right now?
Well, we are seeing some big early voting numbers, Tony, and I think that was to be expected. Obviously, we've got a lot of these state laws governing the processes to vote early were expanded this year because of COVID, so we saw that play out in the primaries. So early voting numbers are pretty significant right now. As of today, according to the U.S. Elections Project, we have almost 75 million people who have vote early. So how does that compare with 2016? In 2016, we had 137 million people vote total. Altogether. So we are already at 55% of the turnout in 2016, so over halfway there. So those are some very big numbers. But if you take a look at these and break these down, I think a couple things that pop out. There's been a lot of discussion about the mail-in ballots and people just wondering about the security of those. Those are being pushed more on the left than on the right. President Trump has tweeted and posted some concerns about that. If you look at the mail-in ballots, there are a lot of mail-in ballots that have come in. Out of the 75 million, about 50 million, 49 million are mail-in, and then one-third, 25 million, are in-person votes. So that's significant. Mail-in ballots do tend to be rejected at higher rates than in-person, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as these actually get counted and all of that. The other thing, Tony, I think that's very significant about these early voting numbers is everybody wonders who's ahead. You know, the Republicans, the Democrats, and we have a breakdown of that for about 50% of these votes. Not every state has party registration affiliation, you know, but for about 50% of these votes, 50% of those states, they do. So if you look at those votes, Democrats have some stuff they're pointing to as a good sign for them. Republicans have stuff they're pointing to as a good sign for them. The breakdown is about 17 million of these, or 48% of those ballots are Democrat, registered Democrats. And then about 11 million or 29% are Republicans. And then about 22%, the remainder, are unaffiliated. So that's a 19-point gap for Democrats. That's what the Democrats are pointing to, saying this is a great sign for us. The thing the Republicans are pointing to, though, is polling going into this election. Over 60% of Democrats said they plan to vote early. Less than 30% of Republicans said they plan to vote early. So the Democrats should be shooting for about a 2-to-1 margin right now, and they're well behind that in these numbers, only about 19% ahead.
So we're at about 70 million early votes.
75 million, yes.
75 million. And what is the projection on the total votes that will be cast in this election?
You know, latest projections I've seen are 150 million. It's really, again, too early to tell. Based off of these numbers, I could see it passing that a little bit. Again, that either way, that would be ahead of the 137 million in 2016. But the latest estimates are that we're going to see somewhere around 150 million total.
So where any idea where those additional voters have have come from?
You know, one thing that's been very interesting is about 25% of these voters are voters that did not vote in 2016. So if you look at that, about a quarter from the analyses I've seen, a quarter of people who didn't vote 4 years ago, that's actually a pretty significant number and points to increased enthusiasm. And according to the analysis I've seen, those voters are about split 50-50 Republican, 50% Republican, 50% Democrat.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, I actually encourage greater participation in the process. So that's a good development. And in part, I mean, that's what we've been doing, is registering more people to vote. So about 75% of our folks have already voted. So they have a job to do in the next 6 days. Even though if they've voted, they can help others make votes, you know, be prepared to make to show up to the polls and vote. Because most of the early voting is, for the most part, in many states, is over, because there's usually a period of time, a week or so, between the early voting and the actual election day. So let's talk some about I'm going to get to the tools in a minute that we have at Pray Vote Stand that people can use to convince those friends, coworkers, or others that they need to vote and how they need to vote. But let's talk about some of the critical races where we've got some really close congressional races.
Yeah, we really do, Tony. And there are a couple levels to this. There's the U.S. Senate, very important, the U.S. House, and then some state legislatures are very important this year as well. Starting with the U.S. Senate, so the Republicans currently have a 53-47 majority in the U.S. Senate, so not a huge majority. This is critical. You know, we saw Amy Coney Barrett get confirmed this week. If President Trump were to win re-election, but not the Republicans didn't keep the U.S. Senate, and Chuck Schumer wasn't charged, a nominee like Amy Coney Barrett is not going to get confirmed.
Yeah.
So if there are any more Supreme Court vacancies, which there's a great chance there will be over the next 4 years, the Senate is so important. So if you look at the breakdown of this, Republicans have two, maybe three pick up opportunities in the U.S. Senate. In Alabama, they're actually looking very good. In Michigan, they have a strong opportunity. That race is looking very close. And then some polling is showing that maybe the Minnesota U.S. Senate race is closing the gap as well. So those would be the Republicans' three chances. But the Republicans are at a disadvantage also in that they're playing a lot of defense this year. There are 10 U.S. Senate races right now currently held by Republicans that Cook Political reports as either toss-up or lean Democrat. And in the polling, I've looked at the polling and all of those, a lot of this is just very, very close. So it's just so important. If you have a U.S. Senate race on the ballot in your state, so important that you and people you know are getting out to vote in that race. The U.S. House, the Republicans would have to pick up, I think it's 18 to 20 House seats to win control. I think that's an uphill climb. It's possible. I don't think it's likely at this point. But then the other level that's not getting discussed as much right now is the state legislative bodies. And this is always important, right? Just because of
especially this year, because in 2020 – the legislative bodies that are in place will deal with this, the census information that is provided, and will be a part of redrawing the legislative and congressional districts.
Yes, absolutely. In the Republicans currently control a small majority of those state legislative bodies across the country, but the Democrats have been very focused, very targeted at trying to flip some of these, especially in these swing states, these legislative bodies, to be able to draw those lines next year.
So whether or not someone lives in, you know, one of these battleground states, because we're going to hear about this, I mean, we're already hearing about it, but we're going to hear more about it in the next 6 days. You mentioned it, Minnesota. We're going to hear about Wisconsin. We're going to hear about Michigan. We're going to hear about Arizona, those key states that are, according to the polls, are like neck and neck where Biden and Trump are competing. But I just don't want people to lose sight of the fact that no matter where they are, and even if their state's solid red, and it's, you know, and the president's going to carry it, or they're solidly blue and Biden's going to carry it, there are other races on the ballot. They need to make sure that they vote, whether it's a congressional race, a Senate race, whether it's state legislator race, whether it's the sheriff that's on the ballot, which we have found during this period of corona, where many sheriffs have refused to enforce these overreaching laws to close down churches. So everyone, school board, I mean, just you name it, every one of these is important. So people need to be voting.
Absolutely, Tony. And we have some great resources for this. I know a lot of people that answered that poll question have voted already. That is fantastic. But hey, like you said, go and find those people who haven't yet, because we know there's a lot of people out there who haven't voted yet. And we have a lot of resources to equip you or share these with those people who haven't voted yet at PrayVoteStand.org. We've got kind of made that a one-stop shop. Lots of resources, but we have voter guides. We have a lot of voter guides there. We all know it can be tricky, depending on the race, to know exactly where candidates stand on some of these issues. They don't like to take clear positions. So we have some guides breaking that down. We have, of course, the presidential guide. And these are all, you know, digital too. So if you want to print out hard copies, share those, you can do that. If you just want to send around a link or text that, you can do that too. But we also have some guides for key U.S. Senate races. And then iVoter Guide, which covers all of the federal races. So you type in your address into that. It'll bring up your customized voter guide. And then in a lot of these key races, it covers the state races as well as the judicial races, which is so important as well.
And to get that tailored voter guide, actually, they can just text their zip code.
Yep, that's right.
To
I believe it's 53445.
Yeah, the same number I gave you out a few moments ago on the poll question. If you just use the same number, 53445, put in your zip code as opposed to the word radio. Put in your zip code and you'll get back a tailored voter guide that covers mainly the federal races. It depends. Some states, it goes a little deeper, but it'll give you some of the key races that will be in your district based upon your zip code. So, again, that number 53445, just put your zip code in and text it to that number, and you'll get back a link to a tailored voter guide. The there are some ballot issues on in certain places as well. Not a whole lot of them mm-hmm. that we're tracking, but there are some.
There are a couple key ones that we're tracking are in Louisiana and also in Colorado. And just some very important legislative measures here. The one in Louisiana is Amendment 1. It's a pro-life constitutional amendment that would amend the state constitution to make it clear that there's no right to abortion or abortion funding in the Constitution.
That's similar to what the state of Tennessee did a few
That's
years
right.
ago. Now, they had to do it because their court had ruled that the legislature didn't have the right. This is just kind of an additional level of protection in Louisiana. I mean, I know, having served there in the legislature, Louisiana is one of the most, if not the most, pro-life state in the country. Always been that way, even under Democratic governors like we have now. But this is just an additional protection mm-hmm. so that if the court were to somehow try to limit the ability of the legislature to be the final say on the issue of life, this deals with it.
That's right. That's right. And so some great work by the people in Louisiana. I've been working a lot with the Love Life Coalition down there. And also there's one in Colorado. This is a Proposition 115. And basically, this is a pro-life change in statute, and it would prohibit abortion after 22 weeks gestation. This is important in Colorado because Colorado is actually one of the most permissive states on abortion in a country. They allow abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy up to the moment of birth, and they don't even have any born alive protections. You know, if there's a botched abortion, you know, protecting that baby who survives that, they don't even have that level of protection. So in Colorado, Proposition 115, this is a common sense measure to put limitations on late term abortion, and doing a lot of work with the End Birthday Abortions Coalition out there, doing some fantastic work on that initiative as well.
All right. Brent Kylan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
And obviously, we're going to be talking to you a lot in the next week as we move closer to Election Day next Tuesday. So, folks, check out the website, prayvotestand.org. We've made this very simple for you. In fact, all the resources are also in Spanish so that they can be shared far and wide so that, share them with friends that may be in a Hispanic church or different places so they can share those resources with them as well, because we want every Bible-believing Christian informed, engaged, and voting in this election. There's so much at stake. And there's some great resources for social media, some comparisons, videos that you can post on your social media just to help inform family and friends. All right, folks, again, tune in tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time for Pray, Vote, Stand, Episode 9. I'll see you then. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.